Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Thursday, March 12, 2020. Some South Sudanese government soldiers continue to harass residents of Yei Town.
If you come on the Yei Otogo Road on mile 14, civilians have been asked to choose between either 32 or 10 states. And if you respond on the choice for 10 states, you'll be beaten and on top, one will be told to pay some money.
And Sudanese activists say discriminative laws should be abolished.
Whenever you get married to a child, what you do next is oppress her right for education, the right of health. You will be the man who controls everything in her life. You can't visit your parents. If at any time I want to divorce you, I can divorce you. If at any time I want to take my children, I can take my children.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Some residents of Yei River County are accusing some government soldiers of harassing them for supporting President Salva Kiir's decision to divert the country to 10 states. Colonel Hamis David, the Deputy Army Commander for South Sudan's People's Defense Forces in Yei River County, says a unit from the Army will conduct road patrols to track down individual soldiers and criminals harassing civilians. Daniel Friday Martin reports for VOA from Yei.
Some villagers from Otoga and Lasupayams say ever since the country returned to 10 states, men in military uniforms have been harassing civilians along roads leading to and from Yei Town. They say some soldiers set up roadblocks along the Yei Ombasi and Yei Lasu roads, at which they ask civilians whether they support 32 or 10 states. Villagers say those who express support for the 10 states are often whipped or asked to pay money. Speaking in Arabic, local resident Moses Modi, a Lasupayam resident, tells South Sudan in Focus that soldiers tortured his son after he told them he supports the decision to return the country to 10 states.
If you come on the Yei Otogo Road on mile 14, civilians have been asked to choose between either 32 or 10 states. And if you respond on the choice for 10 states, you'll be beaten and on top, one will be told to pay some money on his or her local produce. One of my relatives was told to pay 10,000 SSP for his jerrican of harvested honey.
Speaking in Arabic, Kiden Medina, another villager, says she too was harassed by some soldiers who she says are taking the law into their own hands. Medina is appealing to the government to take action against members of the security forces violating civilians' rights on the highways.
On the road, you will find some two or three soldiers putting some writing using ash on the road center asking civilians to choose between 10 or 32 states. And if you choose 32, you will not be beaten. Once you answer 10 states, you are considered a rebel and they also tax civilians.
Speaking in Arabic, Colonel Jemis David, a deputy commander in South Sudan People's Defense Forces in the now defunct Yei River State, says he is aware that some soldiers have harassed civilians on major roads leading to and out of Yei and will be tracked down and brought to justice.
I will take an action to inform our ground soldiers to patrol the roads to find out who exactly is doing such issues on the roads, and secondly, if civilians face such issues on the roads, they should report to our nearest army units in Goja, Kegulu, Morsak, and Lasso, so that our ground soldiers can take an immediate action on such problems.
Major General Lul Roy Kwang, the South Sudan People's Defense Forces spokesman, says he is not aware of soldiers harassing civilians. Kong is urging local authorities to communicate the recent political changes to civilians and soldiers alike.
It is a shared responsibility.
It is a shared responsibility with the local administration to ensure sharing of information with the civil population and the military about the recent political dispensations, and I want to assure the civilian of their safety within the borders of South Sudan, and I don't see any reason for the civilians to fear.
Felix Amule, the Secretary General for the now defunct Yei River State Government, confirms his office has received complaints from civilians about individual soldiers harassing civilians on Yei area roads.
In order to restore confidence,
we need to do the right thing, and please go out there and declare that we are a 10 states governance and not 32 states. I am saying so because there are some people asking questions on the road's end. If it means death, tell them that the president has declared 10 states.
Amule says he will speak on local radio stations to the public and soldiers about the recent changes regarding the number of states, and will remind all soldiers to obey the laws and respect the new unity government. For VOA News, I'm Daniel Friday Martin in Yei, Central Equatorial State.
A coalition of Sudanese groups say it wants the transitional government to reform the country's laws which oppresses women. Activists say the Personal Act law discriminates against women and violates their rights. Michael Atit reports for VOA from the Sudanese capital, Khartoum.
Dozens of Sudanese women activists, while chanting in Arabic, "We need our full rights with no compromise," delivered a petition to Sudan's Justice Ministry as they commemorate the International Women's Day last Sunday. More than 10 women organizations recently formed the coalition Be Strong to pressure authorities to reform the Sudanese family law. Inam Atik, who heads the coalition, reads from the petition in Arabic, saying the Personal Status Act is particularly reprehensible.
Sudanese laws can be regarded as one of the most oppressive laws in the Arab world, which prevents human development in our society. It enshrines defective provisions on marriage, divorce, and child custody. It also clearly encourages child marriage, which is a crime punishable by the international law.
The Personal Status Act governs legal procedures that pertain to personal and familial relations, including marriage, divorce, and inheritance. Article 24 spells out women's guardian powers over the dissolution of her marriage. Under this law, a guardian must be appointed to sign the marriage contract on behalf of the bride. Article 40 of the same law sets the age of 10 as the legal age of marriage. Sudanese activist Sumeya Ashraf says the Personal Status Law was designed under the Islamic Sharia law during the ousted President Omar al-Bashir's 30-year rule. She says thousands of young Sudanese girls have been victimized by the law.
Whenever you get married to a child, what you do next is oppress her right for education, the right of health. You will be the man who controls everything in her life. You can visit your parents. If at any time I want to divorce you, I can divorce you. If at any time I want to take my children, I can take my children. Or I will not pay for them.
Speaking in Arabic, Suleyma Ahmed Al-Gaddal says she divorced her husband 14 years ago when her daughter was 2 years old. To this day, she says her daughter is not allowed to travel with her anywhere without her father's approval, even though he provides no child support.
As I speak now, the passport of my daughter is in his possession and locked inside. My daughter is unable to travel along with me nor go anywhere with anybody. I am advanced age, and at any time I can die. I don't know how will she survive after my death. The law only gives the father the right to decide.
Mabahej Habib Al-Ghadi, a legal consultant in Sudan's Justice Ministry, received the women's petition on behalf of the Justice Minister Nasreddin Abdul Bari. Speaking in Arabic, Al-Ghadi says she will present it to her boss and follow up on the women's demand.
I promise you that I will hand over this petition to the Minister of Justice and I will follow it up very closely. We in the executive office are concerned about women's issues and we are all doing the same work. And if we don't care about women, our society will not develop.
In November, Sudan's transitional government scrapped the controversial Public Order Act, which civil activists say discriminates against women. Human rights activists called the move a good step towards ending human rights violations in Sudan, but say more must be done. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Khartoum.
Some patients at Malakal Teaching Hospital are complaining about what they are calling poor services at the facility. Pregnant women say they wait for more than 5 hours to see a midwife for their monthly checkups. For VOA News, Viola Elias has more from Malakal.
28-year-old Rebecca James, wearing the Sudanese women's attire, commonly known as top, appears exhausted as she quietly sits with other pregnant women waiting to see the midwives for their monthly checkups. Speaking in Arabic, James says she came since early morning but has not managed to be seen as there are many patients ahead of her. We came here for checkups at around 8 in the morning. That is why we are seated here. Because of the long queue, now the time has gone and we are very thirsty and hungry. We do not have a choice but to wait. Patient Aban Joseph says many times she is forced to return home without ever seeing a health professional because the line is too long. Speaking in Arabic, Aban says at this time she was asked to go buy the drugs she needs from the pharmacy in town where she says pills are very expensive. I came here 3 days ago, but I failed to get in. I have general body pain. Speaking in Arabic, Awila James, another patient at the center, says she and other patients here at the health center often run into many problems. Many patients come here every day, but the problem is that there are no medicines, especially injections. The pharmacy only gives oral drugs, and we are tired. We have to go buy from the market. Once you do not have money, then that becomes a problem. Agit Adel, a pharmacist officer at the health center, says the facility usually receives its drug supply from the National Ministry of Health and International Medical Corps. Adel says for the past 2 months, none of the institutions have supplied his health center with drugs. He says many times he is forced to send patients to buy their own drugs from the market.
We have so many drugs, we are not here in the pharmacy, especially injectable drugs, we are lacking of it. So most of the drugs we are here, the tablet, the oral. We don't have other drugs like the penicillin.
Adair says the center receives more than 35 patients every morning and says that number is likely to increase by the end of each day. Peter Malier, a registered midwife at the facility, says mothers at the facilities are the most affected because their wards lack basic services like electricity. Malier says there are no emergency drugs to treat new mothers if they have an infection after giving birth at home.
In maternity unit, we don't have antibiotic for managing other things like other emergencies like peripheral services. So some mothers came from home when they already delivered and they have infection. We don't have ampicillin, we don't have other drugs to manage those cases. So we do go to the town to buy this thing by ourselves.
Peter says it is not unusual for the maternity ward to deliver babies in the dark. And he says there are only 3 midwives that operates in the Malakal Maternity Department. Malakal Hospital was one of the biggest hospital in Upper Nile State before it was destroyed by the civil war in 2016. Reporting for VOA News, I am Viola Elias in Malakal.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, South Sudan national soccer team will not travel for the African Cup of Nations qualifying match. Find out why after this break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today Can you share an inspirational quote and where you heard it from?
Heavy rains are a reminder of challenges in life. Never ask for a lighter rain. Just pray for better umbrella. I just came across it while I was reading something on social media.
This quote I just added from a church. The father was like, "For those who seek, always find. And so fight endlessly for what you want for the future."
Friends are like buttons on the lift. They either bring you down or take you up. I heard it while I was in secondary school and it's stuck since then.
وَمَنْ يَتَّقِ اللَّهِ يَجْعَلْ لَهُ مَخْرَجًا. Whoever fears Allah will have solution to whatever problems. It is from the Holy Quran.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
South Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp. Send us a message on +1 202 630 8011. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1 202 630 8011.
We have a special announcement for our listeners in Juba. Effective Monday, March 16 at midday in Juba, VOA Africa will change its frequency from 93.5 FM to 93.6 FM. After months in prison and a prolonged legal fight, a prominent Nigerian journalist and activist is now facing charges of treason. Omoyele Sowore, founder of news website Sahara Reporters, appeared before the court in Abuja Wednesday and was given a date for a hearing in April. He was initially arrested last August by Nigeria's Department of State Services, the country's counterintelligence and counter-terror force. VOA Salim Solomon reports from Washington.
After months in prison and a prolonged legal fight, a prominent Nigerian journalist and activist is now facing charges of treason. Omoyele Sowore, founder of the news website Sahara Reporters, appeared before the High Court in Abuja Wednesday and was given a date for a hearing in April. He was initially arrested last August by Nigeria's Department of State Services, the country's counterintelligence and counterterror force. The arrest came after Sowore organized an event, Revolution Now, to protest corruption and allegedly unfair elections. He was released on December 5, rearrested the following day, and released again on December 24th at the direction of Nigeria's Attorney General. Sowore's wife, Opiemi Sowore, told VOA he is being punished for expressing dissent.
Yele is currently in the situation that he's in because he has spoken truth to power. So as a result, he has been charged with treason.
She said Nigeria's constitution protects freedom of assembly and peaceful protests, and she believes the charges against her husband are unfounded and intended to intimidate him and others who protest against the government.
No evidence has been produced to support the case of treason. Again, the case is based on the fact that he organized a peaceful protest, which is not illegal in Nigeria. So others who actually attended the protest were charged with unlawful gathering, and many of them are free at the moment.
The new charges come as Nigeria's Senate considers a controversial social media bill that would criminalize spreading false information online and allow the government to block access to social media sites such as WhatsApp, Facebook, and Twitter. Critics say the tool will be used to silence critics. Wade McMillan, Senior Vice President of Programs and Legal Strategy at Robert F. Kennedy Human Rights and Nonprofit Advocacy Group, said the Nigerian government is intentionally dragging out the legal process against Sowore. Initial charges of money laundering and cyberbullying that were brought against him have been dropped, and court dates have been postponed, leaving him in legal limbo.
And what we're seeing now is an intentional delay tactic by the Nigerian government, again and again, not to proceed with the case because they have no evidence. The charges are baseless and everybody knows that.
He believes the objective is to intimidate and silence other dissenting voices in the country.
They're drawing out this prosecution to set an example and to silence other Nigerians who wish to gather around him and express their peaceful dissent in similar ways.
Meanwhile, Shuaire's wife and two children, who live in the U.S. and are U.S. citizens, wait desperately to be reunited with him.
It's hard. I have had to explain to them why their father was in prison, and secondly, why their father can't come home. My son has had nightmares, honestly, it's just been really hard for them. The great thing is that children are resilient, and I pray that beyond this, they're going to grow and live wonderful lives and be strong. But this has taken its toll on them. It's taken its toll on our family.
Solomon Solomon, POA News, Washington.
South Africa has seen its first locally transmitted case of the coronavirus a week after the nation reported its first case. That brings the country's total number of confirmed cases to 17. Meanwhile, South Africa's military is preparing to bring home 122 citizens from Wuhan, the Chinese city where the virus originated. Anita Powell reports for VOA from Johannesburg.
Health Minister William Kize says South Africa's first coronavirus patient is a 38-year-old man from the eastern KwaZulu-Natal province who recently traveled to Italy with his wife. He briefed the nation's parliament on the case Thursday afternoon in Cape Town.
I was informed this morning, I've already briefed the president. This is a person who had traveled to Italy, and there were a group of 10, and so they returned a few days ago. But the patient had consulted a general practitioner who was, because of the level of collaboration, was aware of the protocol that we have to take. Patient had presented with fever, headaches, malaise and sore throat, not much of a cough. And in the process, they took the specimen and then they got the laboratory informed. And this has been tested positive.
The patient is being treated and officials are exploring who he may have come into contact with. Additionally, he said, a team of health experts has descended on the area and the patient's doctor has self-isolated as well. The World Health Organization says more than 93,000 people have been infected worldwide since the beginning of the outbreak in late 2019. Of those cases, more than 3,000 people have died, the vast majority of them in China. South Africa has identified 13 hospitals equipped to treat patients, and it has implemented screening at the continent's busiest airport in Johannesburg. Kize also said the appearance of the global epidemic is not a sign of failure, but rather a sign of the success of South Africa's surveillance system. And he assured South Africans the situation is being handled.
This issue of COVID-19 is not going to be a matter of government and the health services only. The landing of any of the cases in South Africa are not because of the weakness of our health system. It's because of the social interaction that we have with the world. And therefore, when people come over into South Africa, we just need to know there are certain basic precautions that we need to take into account. Firstly, the issue of personal hygiene, coughing, controlling of droplet infection becomes very important.
Last week, South African officials announced they would repatriate 132 virally negative South Africans from Wuhan City, where the virus began in China. Mkhize did not answer an MP's questions about when exactly that group would return to South Africa, saying it would be between 7 and 10 days. Anita Powell, VOA News, Johannesburg.
An African Cup of Nations 2021 qualifiers football match between South Sudan and Uganda has been postponed due to the coronavirus. South Sudan was supposed to host Uganda on March 31st at Kenya's Nyayo Stadium. The match could not be played in Juba because the national stadium in Juba is under renovation to meet international standards. David Monodanga has the details for VOA from Juba.
As countries around the world try to reduce the spread of the coronavirus, normal life, including sport, is being put on hold, and South Sudan is no exception. The South Sudan Football Association, or SSFA, told reporters in Juba Wednesday that South Sudan's Bright Stars won't be able to host the Uganda Cranes in Kenya in a 2021 Africa Cup of Nations qualifiers match at the end of the month. SSFA officials said the Kenya Football Federation wrote to South Sudan football officials and the Confederation of African Football about postponing the match. Anthony John is the SSFA Secretary General.
We are supposed to play our home match in Nyayo Stadium
Kenya on 31st of March 2020. But unfortunately, we just received a letter from Secretary General of Kenya Football Federation that they have to stop all their matches, international and even local matches, because of the coronavirus issue.
The Kenyan government called off the AFCON qualifiers match the Harambee Stars were supposed to play in the Comoros earlier this week due to the coronavirus. The U.S. Center for Disease Control and the World Health Organization have strongly recommended that people not attend large gatherings in an effort to prevent the spread of the virus. SSF Secretary General John says his association has written to the Confederation of African Football, or CAF, to find out what will happen with their home match.
Up to now, I cannot say that maybe we'll play here and there, because we changed several times with CAF. We started in Khartoum, we changed to Nairobi, and now we don't know. We'll see the response of CAF.
Sports pundit Kenyi Isaac Wani says it's disappointing for football fans that South Sudan cannot host its home matches inside its own country.
It is a shame for South Sudan not to play football matches in the country, mainly because of the lack of infrastructure and a failure to beat the deadline for the renovation of Juba National Stadium. Now, with the spread of the coronavirus in some countries, things are never looking good. These are surely hard times for South Sudan.
Wani says it will be easier and cheaper if Uganda could host both matches. The Bright Stars are already in camp awaiting the two games against Uganda. Radio Miraya sports analyst Samuel Pawon says South Sudan has no choice but to search for another host, but he says the Football Association should press engineers at the Juba Stadium construction site to speed up renovation of the country's only standard football pitch.
Playing at home is good because first you have the environment, you have the fans, you have everything familiar to you. So it gives you upper hand of winning the games and having good results. Going to the neighboring country, playing the home games away is not actually helping our team. It's not helping the Bright Star at all. If the blame is coming from the US company, then the SSFA should make sure they put more pressure on the US company to go faster and work very faster.
Pawon says it is better than spending too much money on travel and accommodation of players in foreign countries, especially now that coronavirus is spreading rapidly across the world. There are now more than 100 cases recorded in 11 countries in Africa, according to the latest figures from the World Health Organization. For VOA News, I am David Monodanga in Juba.
We have a special announcement. Effective Monday, March 16, at 12 midday in Juba, VOA Africa will change its frequency from 93.5 FM to 93.6 FM. That's our show for this Thursday. We now leave you with the song Junub by Nyapal.
Thank you.
listening to Nyapal with the song Junub. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for allowing us in your vehicles, homes, and on your cell phones. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.